Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome into another edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe, Elijah Campbell here with you today. Darren has the day off. Administrative duties was the old term that we like to use in a general sense, Chase, but we were soldier on without Darren today.
On assignment, that's another one.
On assignment. Yeah, I'd say that's a better way of saying it today.
You want to hear a funny story, not to get off on a tangent, but I've always loved this. One of my professors in college told us this story. So Dan Rather, who's a longtime anchor for the CBS Evening News, you know, a lot of times would take a Friday off here and there, have a long weekend, and they would always say, Dan Rather is on assignment. Well, as it turns out, he most of the time was on his yacht. The name of his yacht was On Assignment.
Okay.
So.
Wait.
So it was a factual.
Was it On Assignment or Assignment? Because if he was on assignment.
Well, yeah, Assignment. I think it was
then
called Assignment.
Then he'd be
on
assignment.
Right. He's on assignment.
Yep. Okay.
I always thought that was funny.
So Darren is not on a yacht, but he's hopefully going to be just fine. He's got, I don't know if he wants us to share what the issue is, but we have our fingers crossed that everything is okay. It's nothing.
Yeah.
As a pet owner.
Yes.
We've got some.
Pet duties.
Yes. So we're hopeful.
I'm glad you brought that up because I don't want people to think, oh, he lost the bet, so he's taking the day off. It's not that.
But he did lose a bet.
He
did lose a bet. And at some point, there will be the payout from that.
Yeah. Yeah. And he lost it. All right. And that was a fun game. I was at Nashville SC Engineering, so I couldn't watch, you know, as closely as I wanted to, but I had it on, and 1-1 at the end, was it 1-1 at the end of the first, and then Colorado was able to pour it on and win 4-1. So Hutchinson gets the win for them. They went with Hudobin, which was pretty much everybody's thought. Dallas went with Hudobin, but it wasn't enough, and Colorado has forced Game 7.
They have to be feeling good about Game 7 as well, whereas Dallas. Do you come back with Hudobin? Do you think about what happens with Bishop if you go with him? Could he win a Game 7 for you? That's a tough call. The other thing that's jumping out to me is, wow, Colorado and the moves they made with that trade that involved the Predators, they have absolutely hit the jackpot. Because the pick that they got from Ottawa is Cale McCarr.
Yeah.
And Cale McCarr has
definitely worked in their
favor. Cale McCarr is the reason they won the game last night. That guy is incredible, and he's only scratching the surface of what he's going to be. Sam Girard is a really, really good player. He may not ever be a Norris Trophy winner, and I don't know what role he would be playing for the Predators. They would have had to really stay creative. The Predators' issue, I don't even recall if it's an issue. It's a good problem. They had too many excellent defensemen. And so it was a matter of turning Seth Jones and Sam Girard, the guys they traded, into assets.
Yeah.
And
they've had to do it twice now.
Yeah, they did. And, Ryan Johansson has been a good asset for sure. Is he Seth Jones? I don't know. But what would Seth Jones would not have been able to play the role that he's played. There's only so many minutes you divide up, and they have so many good defensemen. And
they don't go on that run in 2017 without Johansson, even though he got hurt.
No question about it.
But he was the MVP of that team.
Right. So, you know, in a vacuum, if you're saying who's a better player, Seth Jones or Ryan Johansson, I think a lot of people at this point would take Seth Jones. But that's not what the Predators needed at the time. They desperately needed a number one center. And Johansson's been good. Now, we know the situation with Kyle Turris, the key asset they got in that deal, and that hasn't worked out nearly as well. Whereas Girard and the pick they got from Ottawa for Matt Duchene is Cale McCarr. Plus, they got some other guys as well in there. They had other picks. So Colorado, who was at the bottom of the barrel for a while there, they reloaded quickly, and that's a textbook way of how you rebuild in a salary cap. They were patient. They were getting lampooned all over the league, but I gotta salute them. So we'll see if they can win in Game 7. Whether they win this game or not, you know, the future still looks really good for them. They're going to have those key decisions of making sure they're smart with their salary cap dollars, because Cale Makar is going to make a lot of money here pretty soon. And then a guy like Gerard, you wonder, you know, what's his role? How much do you pay him? All of that stuff. I don't know if they've even signed Gerard to the next contract yet. I have to go back and look.
You're right. He's solid. He's a very good defenseman. But if I'm looking at it, you know, trying to look at the big picture, I think I'd rather have Favreau. I think Favreau has a higher upside in the long run. And, you know, if Gerard hangs around, who knows what that means, you know, with Favreau. Does Favreau even get drafted or whatever?
Does he end up getting traded?
Right.
That's the...
Yeah, so...
So time will tell. They're different kind of players. Gerard's a very unique player, just the way he skates and his creativity, whereas Favreau is just your rock-solid, you know, Ryan Suter kind. I still think I was actually reading Corey Pronman, who is the Athletic's main talent evaluator of up-and-coming prospects. He's got the Predators ranked 29th in the organizational rankings, and he's got a tidbit on all of these guys we're talking about, and he thinks Dante Favreau is clearly going to be very good, but is he going to be great? That's the question long term, because he has no one tool. You don't sit there and just go, wow, did you see that shot by Dante Favreau? Or wow, did you see that blazing speed by Dante Favreau? You know, he doesn't really have any of that. Wow, look how big and strong that kid is. You don't say that about Dante Favreau. He's just...
But I don't know if you need him to be great.
Well, he's rock solid in all those, in really every category.
Right, because they have great. I mean, they have Yossi, and they have, and I put Ellis in that category too.
I agree.
So they have those two. They have Ekholm, who is absolutely solid and underrated. And you know, for people that looked at Ekholm's year this season, and they go, well, something was off with him. Well, he was paired with a rookie. He had to cut. There were times where he had to cover up for Favreau's mistakes or help him out, and that was expected. I mean, it was you saw it the year before when Favreau joined the team. Hamius was having to do the same thing. It's just Favreau has to have time to grow,
right?
And putting him next to a guy like Ekholm is the right move. But playing next to PK Subban and then Dante Favreau, those are two different things.
They always say, and I think this is a great example, it takes about 100 games to really know what you've got in a defenseman. Gerard is at that point. I think you're starting to see him go to another level. And he's going to be overshadowed by Makar, because Makar is a superstar. He's a freak. For the Predators, Fabro's getting to that 100 games. He's getting close. You know, he's not even quite there yet. But if you take a look at Ellis and Yossi and Ekholm, it took them about 100 games. You know, they weren't the players they are today right away. You know, only the freaks of nature like Makar and those guys make the immediate impact. And Favreau has done a really good job just being thrown in there and being good. But I'm hoping there's another level, as you hope as well, to his game. So let's hit on the big story of the morning too, because we're gonna in our next segment hit on Nashville SC, who had a nice performance last night over at the stadium, Nissan Stadium, got a tie, came from behind against Orlando. So we'll talk about them in our next segment. But let's touch quickly on the Titans. The storm clouds were there for a while, and they have made the move. Steven Guskowski will be their kicker, it looks like, at age 36. They make the move this morning.
Yeah, and it's funny. I texted the GM, Floyd Reese, and I said, "Way to get the kicker cut," because he called that the other day. You know, and said that if he were the GM, he would have Guskowski in his office. And that's exactly what John Robinson and company did. I don't hate this move. I know there are questions. Okay, does he still have it at 36? He's coming off an injury, but I was looking at his stats, Willie. How many field goals do you think he's had blocked in his career?
Well, I was looking at his stats, but I did not look at that stat. I mean, I'm sure
he's had two, and it was his rookie year. I mean, the guy is solid.
The guy. Overall. Well, let's go to the next step of that. I would say that before he had his issues last year, which if you're the Titans, you're hoping that was solely because of the hip injury that he was dealing with, and you have to hope that that's not an issue anymore, that the surgery and the healing has taken place, and he can have another couple of seasons, starting with this season, and let's worry about next year. He's 36, you go year to year. And there's plenty of kickers that have gone well into their 40s, as we know. But he was as good as any kicker in the league for a long period of time. If you take a look, he's over 90% success rate in field goals a lot of years. I'm just looking at it right here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years out of his career, he's hit over 90% of his field goals. And that's leading the league 3 times in field goals made. So it's not like he was, 11 for 12, and they never had to kick field goals. He's also kicked in tough weather. New England's not always the easiest place to kick. He's not kicking in a dome. So I would have to say, for the length of his career, he's been as efficient. He's been overshadowed because Vinatieri has that folklore of being the Patriots kicker, but Gostkowski has been absolutely rock solid for a long, long time. So he's as good as anybody in the game when he's on. So the only question is, can he still do it?
Yeah, and that's what they need to find out. And I believe that the plan is probably, I mean, Tucker McCann's still on the roster, so you have him, but I think the plan would probably be to see if Greg Joseph, if he doesn't get picked up by another team, could be on the practice squad. I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to carry two kickers in that way, just because of, one, the COVID uncertainties, and two, what we're just talking about with Gostkowski overall. Can he still kick? But I believe that this is the right move. You've brought in a veteran that has done it. He obviously knows Vrabel, knows John Robinson. I mean, he knows a lot of these guys that keep making the Patriots connections, but got to see it in a game, and we can't, right. And it's going to be week one.
You're only as good as your last kick in this game. That is the reality of the job. That is the job description of kicker. It does not matter what you've done before, but if there's a guy that I think is a worthy bet, if he is healthy, and he can be anything. Just 2 years ago, he was 84%. That's effective. 27 out of 32 field goals, 84%. That's better than average, I would say. I mean, in this day and age of the NFL, you got to hit 82% of your field goals to be what you want. And as we know, you start looking closer and closer. Well, what about the field goals? How many were from 48? How many were from 28? How many were, 56? But this guy kicked a 62-yarder at age 33 in 2017. So he's got recent success, too. It's not like he was a great kicker 5, 6, 7 years ago. He was as good as anybody year after year up until last year derailed him with, we think, the hip injury. He missed the extra points, and they had, I guess, no choice. He was hurt. They put him on the shelf. They had signed him to a 2-year deal. So the Patriots actually even owe him some money.
No, the Titans had signed Suckup to a 4-year deal.
Yeah. So we'll see, but cuz you can have the greatest credentials in the world, but you got to get off to a good start. But I like the move. I feel way, way better about their kicking situation than I did at any point in the last couple years, right? Since Suckup started to have the issues.
Completely agree.
All right, when we come back, Drake Hillis will join us. We'll talk some Nashville SC. They got another positive step forward in their very first year in the MLS. We got a lot coming. We've got Elliot Friedman later in the show. We're going to talk Texans today as we continue our previews. We'll talk a lot of Titans today. We'll keep tabs on their practice day. Lots coming here on the show. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We
We return to the show here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Drake Hills is with us, Nashville SC reporter for the Tennessean. He's had some games to cover. Unfortunately, the last time we had Drake on, it was during the whole uncertainty and the unfortunate COVID situation that prevented Nashville SC from participating in a tournament down in Orlando. But that's water under the bridge now. They've had a chance to play some games, and they're having some success. They had a draw last night against Orlando. Drake joins the show. Drake, thanks a lot for coming on with us.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, guys. Is there a beef that I don't know about? It's been too long for me to get on the show. What's up with you guys?
Well, we need to get into this. Let's go. So, Drake, it's great to see the guys playing. They've had their moments here. Last night, a good surge in the second half to get even and come away with a point.
Right, and the first half was definitely not looking like getting away with a point. I'll tell you that right now. Just the uncertainty, and you could tell it was visible frustration from pretty much every player on the field. I mean, one time there was a time where, you know, Nashville was actually on top of the game, and Walker Zimmerman, one of their defenders, the center back had he had the ball and he was getting ready to play a ball to Alistair Johnson out wide to the right. And for some reason, there was just some miscommunication between Walker and Alistair, and Alistair wasn't able to handle the ball and allowed to go out of bounds. And it was yet another turnover off of in a situation where Orlando was yet to even close them down. They were uncontested, yet Nashville was still unable to put something together in attack. That was the theme of the first half in its entirety. The second half was drastically different. Just 2 minutes into the second half, Randall Leal, who has been leading Nashville in shots and shots on goal, gets his first goal in the league after coming from Saprissa in Costa Rica. So if you are Randall Leal and if you are Gary Smith, the head coach, you're quite pleased with how much of a quick turnaround Nashville can produce. And also it represents the quick turnaround that Nashville has had to go through as well. One game in the middle of the week, only on a day and a half's rest. They're going up against yet another tough opponent. And then just 2 days, 3 days later, they play once again, and they have to exude this top-level intensity, but also some quality as well, and the struggle to do so and the challenge to do so. So that this is a theme where, you know, say, hey, if you could just get some consistency, this is what I asked Gary Smith at the end. If you can get some consistency with the games at home, being able to be familiar with your situation, try to have some bit of a flow to your week, then you could produce some positive results. And we've seen that with Nashville SC starting last Sunday and then obviously last night against Orlando.
Drake, I would have to imagine that any team that hasn't played together a whole lot is going to have some moments that you're talking about where you're just not on the same page, you haven't built chemistry over a long period of time. But I'm curious, as you've observed, are they starting to carve out the role definition that a new team is searching for, where they start to know, here's the guy we want to go to when we need a goal. Here's how our flow of subs are going to go. You know, here's our rock bedrock on the back line. You know, these things that you have to find out. You only can find out by playing the games.
Right. I think there are a couple that are probably set in stone. If, like you said, you need that rock in the back line, that is Walker Zimmerman.
Right.
He is one of the best center backs in Major League Soccer, full stop. He is one of the best defenders and one of the best American defenders, someone who will line up for the U.S. men's national team, I would expect, in the next year or so, sometime in between there. So
exciting to think about when you
right.
get down to it, Drake.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to say that's our guy. That's
exactly.
Nashville's guy playing for USA.
That will be Nashville SC's, you know, first cap in representing the club. And do I expect Dan Lovett to possibly be in that conversation at left back? Yeah, for sure. And so you have that set in stone, right? You also have, unfortunately for David Akam, it's looking like he's becoming more of that first sub off the bench if they need some spice in attack. And pretty much since, I want to say, the Dallas games, know, going into the Atlanta game and then obviously Orlando and then playing Miami, he's been coming off the bench. And it's been Alex Mouille, it's been Alistair Johnston up at the right wing, and not David Akam, who started both games in March or in February and in March. So You're seeing some roles being taken to, but in terms of a guy who we need to get a goal from, that question is far from being answered for Nashville SC. You've got five players tied for one goal apiece, so there's nobody that's taking the reins there. It would mean Randall Leal adding to that. So there isn't one person right now for Nashville that's taken that boot by its bootstraps and tried to lace him up and say, hey, I'm going to be the guy. But like you said, I mean, there still is a lot of, games to be played. And I think the consistency is the ball has yet to really catch some momentum here. I think they're just now getting into a rhythm. We'll see what happens in September. September meaning at the end of this month, when there are hopeful some more games to be announced and Nashville can get a little bit more of a consistency in playing, because of right now, that question is just far from being answered.
Drake, as we learn about this team, I think as if you've been paying attention at all, you know that Zimmerman is going to be a part of that core for a long time. They're really high on him. They've committed to him contractually. Who else would be in that category that you think will be on this team as part of their early core that they're going to try to build around? Are there any other names that jump out to you?
I think personally, if you take a look at just who they got back there along with Walker Zimmerman, I would say Dave Romney is certainly with them as well. He's a left-footed center back, and those are difficult to find in terms of top quality. And once you get one, you don't really want to get rid of them, especially for someone like Dave Romney, who has shown that he can be just as effective not only in defense but also in set pieces. Although he is a defender, he plays with the ball at his feet like he plays a little bit further up the field. So he's a good passer of the ball. He can dribble. So he's got that knack as well. But also we saw at Orlando just about 8 days ago that he could score. He scored the goal for Nashville against Orlando, although it was a loss. But, he was able to score off a header on a set piece. And, that shows his ability in attack as well, when the ball is dead and there's going to be a free kick. So that someone like Dave Romney is certainly in that position, although, Dan Lovitz is 29 now, and, he's certainly not the 24, 25-year-old that he once was, but still, he is still very much in his prime, in my opinion. And Dan Lovitz, as I mentioned earlier, is a U.S. men's national team consideration, and so I can see him staying in Nashville for quite some time. If you go further up the field, I certainly would keep in mind of maybe some of the guys who don't have that prowess, right, that big name like a Walker Zimmerman in MLS right now. I do personally like Brian Anunga. He's in his first year in MLS. He's not going to be a guy right now that's going to jump off the page. He's not going to be a guy right now that's going to be a sure shot in the starting lineup, but he has a ceiling that's pretty high up from where he is right now, and I can see him developing into at least being a reinforcement coming off the bench, if not eventually becoming a starter. He's only 24 years old, and so that creates a lot of a time for development as well. I would say in attack, you really have to take a look at the players that they already have. I'm not quite sure that there's one specific player who has the absolute for sure, this is their guy, other than we have to wait and see what Randall Leal and Hadi Mukhtar are going to be. But if I were to pick those two, obviously right now it just looks like Randall has maybe immersed and got himself fit into the team just a little bit, although both of those players haven't really caught their mark yet. So if there are going to be players for Nashville SC that are going to stay and they're going to have an elongated career with Nashville, I will say that they are probably on the defensive side.
Drake Hills is with us from the Tennessean, and I'm glad that you kind of went down this road, because I was going to bring up Hani Mukhtar. Before I get into my question about him specifically, I think it's important to do a little soccer 101. He was the team's first designated player, and I have recently learned some of the terminology, as a lot of people are, going through this process with Nashville SC being new. Can you explain to our listeners exactly what a designated player means, what that means?
Right, of course. So a designated player is a particular signing on an MLS roster that is exceeding of a maximum budget charge for a particular player. So similar to the way the Titans and to the way that, you know, especially the Titans. If you're a big Titans fan, obviously you know about trying to sign free agents. You know about the situation this offseason with, you know, Jack Conklin. You had Derrick Henry. You had Ryan Tannehill. And trying to sign everybody, you know, you can't just give everybody all the money, right? You got a salary cap to stay under. It's the same thing with Major League Soccer and with Nashville SC. However, in Major League Soccer, you can sign a player that can exceed a maximum budget charge, which is a cap usually in terms of the contract at a specific level, at a specific number that usually fluctuates each year. And so for Hani Mukhtar, being a designated player, his salary can exceed the maximum salary cap for a particular player because he is a designated player. Now there's a lot of different rules that I don't want to get into the weeds about different types of categories of money that you could use to make sure that a player is under that charge, or so it doesn't count, because you can only have three designated players on your active roster. So right now, Hani Mukhtar is confirmed as the one designated player for Nashville. Now, Nashville SC can use money to buy down other players' contracts so they can sign more players as good as Hani and may cost as much as Hani did in the, you know, $2 to $3 million range and still, you know, be in compliance with MLS rules. So without getting too much into the details, because I know that it gets really weird. I got to tell you, Chase, it gets really weird. But that's the setup right now. So Hani is if you sign a designated player, that's a big deal in Major League Soccer.
Right, and that was my understanding when I had the rule. John Freeman explained it to me as I try and learn, you know, more about MLS and Nashville SC. So with all that said, and you kind of mentioned it in answering Willie's question, Hani Mukhtar is one of those guys that hasn't quite gotten to the level that they're hoping that he gets to with this team yet, and some of it could be chemistry. Now, he was a part of the goal last night. He made a pretty big play with that. But what do you think needs to change with him? Is it just acclimation? The more games he plays, you're going to see him break through. He's going to score. He's going to be one of the go-to guys. What is it that you see with Hani Mukhtar?
He needs to play more games. He needs to be in a more consistent and more conventional system. And all of those are intangibles that he can't control. Trying to play in a regular season that is regular. You know, we're seeing from Major League Soccer, we are seeing a irregular Major League Soccer season. And that doesn't help players like Hani Mukhtar coming from Europe. He played for IF Brøndby in the Danish Super League. And, you know, they're getting ready for their season. Their season doesn't start until September 13th because they're on the conventional schedule from, you know, fall to spring. So he's not used to – this is his first time playing in the summer. Not only that, he's playing in the South. Not only that, he's playing every 4 days. And not only that, he's having to get used to getting on flights and getting on buses just 6 or 7 hours before kickoff. And so he's struggling with that, and rightfully so. Like everyone is in Major League Soccer. It isn't just, you know, privy to Hani's experience. I think it's Randall Leal's experience. It's Walker Zimmerman's experience. It's Alistair Johnson's experience. It's Daryl Dike from Orlando City's experience. This isn't just a Hani issue. But because he is a designated player for Nashville SC, and because he is the guy who would, you know, usually be pulling the strings in attack for Nashville, he has that extra limelight on him. And so for Hani, he just needs to play more. He needs to get in a more consistent environment and playing in a more healthy environment. Hopefully that means a little bit more rest between games. That means a little more training. But to get back to your question, Chase, I mean, so the current year right now and the DP maximum charge is just over $612,000. And that, obviously, he exceeds that. In addition to his transfer cost, that which is usually around 1.5, 3 million, those numbers, the reason why I'm mentioning those is because those numbers also kind of put him in a different limelight. So for Hani, he still has the opportunity to produce. He still has the opportunity to be the attacking guy, to be over the free kicks, to be taking penalties as he does for Nashville, and still be able to succeed. But I think we'll have to wait a little bit longer to see that.
Drake, great stuff. Thank you very much for lending your insight. We're all learning little by little. I know a lot of people already are diehards. They know everything you're talking about and more, and they can't wait for the next game. And for a lot of us, we want to learn about Mukhtar and Zimmerman and all these guys that hopefully are going to be here for a while and lead this group to a lot of success. We'll talk to you again down the road.
You guys take care. Thank you.
Thanks,
Chase. All right. And Chase, I know you've been on board. You're hands-on for all these games here. When is the next contest?
It'll be Sunday night, a nationally televised game on FS1. So we'll have a pregame for you at 6:45 on ESPN 94.9. Saw Drake last night at Nissan Stadium in the press box, so I got to talk to him for a little bit. And I will say this is obviously working the games and engineering the games. It's been good for me because I'm learning. You know, I'm able to ask questions, and because soccer is a sport that I just didn't know that much about. Obviously, I did some PA in high school. I played when I was 3 years old. That's really been my experience, and I've obviously watched the World Cup and all of that. But learning the differences between the leagues and USL games and MLS and this roster, it's been fun. So it's another thing that people in this city can learn. And I'll say this, and it's just fun being there and being able to see it, because the game is fun to watch.
When we come back, we'll talk more. Floyd Reese coming up at 11 o'clock. We'll get into Stephen Guskowski, Floyd's thoughts, and you may have heard it, whether it be on their show in the afternoon with Jared and the GM or some of the promos we're playing, you may have gotten a taste of Floyd's philosophy over the last few weeks about Jadeveon Clowney, where, you know, it's getting crunch time. Who's he going to end up going with, and what would you pay him? Floyd's got some strong opinions on that. We'll get into that at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned. We've got more coming on Darren Donick and Chase. Well, you heard it during the promo between segments here. We had a pretty spirited discussion about Leonard Fournette the last couple of days, and it has now come to a close. Leonard Fournette is a Tampa Bay Buck. So, all of the hot air that we put out all over the airwaves the last couple of days, it never really got to a point, I don't think, where the Titans would look at it. You know, to me, for there to be any interest on the Titans' end, he would have had to be sitting there for a week with everybody going, why is nobody picking up Leonard Fournette for it actually to have a conversation? But, Chase, it makes a lot of sense. It seems like the Bucks, as soon as nobody put in a claim for him on the waiver wire at $4 million, they were the first to jump in and say, okay, we've got the deal for you, Leonard. $4 million doesn't work for us, but here's what we can do. And it seems to me that Fournette had to have been interested in the Bucs more than anybody else, because it sounds like the Patriots have some issues up in their running back stable. So they were interested in as well, but Fournette wanted to go play with Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, and who could blame him? And you wonder, too, does Tom Brady have some pull with that organization now of saying, I mean, because we've seen Gronk. I mean, Gronk has come down there. That obviously he had a lot to do with that. Does he say, hey, you know, I'd like a player like Fournette to be behind me, so let's go talk to him? You know, the interest has to be mutual. But this is not to me, this is not for Leonard Fournette a money deal. This is a go prove it. It's 1 year, go play with the greatest quarterback ever, and let's see what you can get done. And, you know, that could obviously lead to some things for him in the future. But it makes sense. We kind of called it of, you know, you can't rule out the Bucs because of the Brady factor, and now it looks like they got him. So I'm curious to see what the backfield overall looks like for them, which has been, I guess, the biggest question for that team since Tom Brady got there. You know the weapons that he's going to have at a wide receiver, and we'll see what Gronk is. But having, you know, he hasn't had the big name running backs in New England, but they still have been effective, and he's got to find that guy that can, you know, can catch the ball. You know, could that be a Keyshawn Vaughn, you know, from Vanderbilt, the rookie? Could he be, you know, could he evolve into that role, something like that? We'll find out. They got LeSean McCoy in camp as well, Ronald Jones. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly what running backs make that roster.
I try to look at it from Keyshawn Vaughn's point of view. He got drafted probably thinking, man, what a great opportunity. They don't really have a whole lot of running backs. Now you have some of the biggest names going with Shady McCoy and now Fournette and Ronald Jones. You've got a lot of guys to work with now, and Vaughn is going to have to fight for everything he gets. But I did watch Mike Tannenbaum this morning when they were having their discussion on ESPN. He really likes Vaughn. He made a point to say, don't sleep on Keyshawn Vaughn. You may not know who this guy is, but he's got a chance, which makes me wonder how Keyshawn has done in the practices so far. We might have to go check in on that, because I do want to see how they divvy up the roles. And you just mentioned it, Chase. From Leonard Fournette's point of view, it wasn't just where can I go win. That's a huge part of it, but he's also has to be thinking for his career, where can I go that gives me a best shot at a really good next contract? Because that's what he's fighting for, right? After this year, there's no guarantee he even gets another contract. He's got to play and put up numbers to get what he wants, which is a new investment. But how do they use him? Is he going to be the main man, or is he going to be a role player?
That's the question, because these are the running backs they currently have on their roster. Raymond Calais, who is a Louisiana Lafayette, he's a rookie, I guess an undrafted guy. Ronald Jones, who's been there. LeSean McCoy, they just signed him. Dyer Okwa, but I can't say his name, out of Wisconsin. Keyshawn Vaughn, and now they're adding Leonard Fournette. So I mean, they obviously are going to have to make some decisions. You wonder if LeSean McCoy, if this is the end, even though what I've read, they've been impressed with his work ethic and the effort that he's put in. But to your point on the contract for Leonard Fournette, if I'm his people, if I'm his group of advisors, I tell him, yeah, you know what? Go play with Brady. You're going to learn some things. You're going to learn, you know, how to be a better pro by being around somebody like that. And if there's any type of funny business, if you know, what have you with Leonard Fournette, Tom Brady's going to squash that right away because he's not going to allow it. So from a long-term view, I think this is a really good opportunity for Leonard Fournette. He can grow up some. He's been humbled. Even though Jacksonville's a dumpster fire in itself, you know, you can still, there's some takeaways from this, and he can go play a year with Tom Brady and then see what happens after that and have a very good shot at winning a Super Bowl. So I really don't see a ton of negatives from Leonard Fournette's point of view by doing this.
We'll get into this with Floyd a little bit later. In fact, right at 11 o'clock. I heard some of his discussion. He is really down on Jadeveon Clowney and has been for a while. It's not like he just started thinking this, right? He's all along kind of asked the question, why is everybody going crazy over this guy? You know, why pay this guy big money? He has been adamant he wouldn't do it. So does that sway you a little bit, Chase? It always gives me pause. I think the world of Floyd. And
yeah.
So I'm going to listen when he gives a strong opinion like that, because from my viewpoint, I see a need there. And if it's a one-year investment, even if it doesn't work out well, you're only on the hook for 1 year, in theory, right? But I am curious, as each day goes by and you get one day closer, you're inside of 2 weeks of playing a game now. So not only do you have to be thinking, we want this guy, but can we get him ready to go to where he can help you? Like, what are you getting? With each passing day,
right,
the chances dwindle that he's really going to be ready to go and helping you every week. Because you could make the argument that if you sign him now, it's going to take him a month before you really get him comfortable. And you run the risk that he gets hurt or pulls something. He hasn't been practicing at game speed. There's a lot of things that can happen.
Well, it gives me concern simply because, number one, Floyd knows talent evaluation. He knows football. But he also knows the situation with the Titans right now. You know, Roberson got banged up the other day. They're very thin at the position. Vic Beasley hasn't practiced. I mean, Vic Beasley is still not available, and he was their signing. So they need help at that position, at pass rush. And if he still feels that way about Clowney, that makes you tilt your head and go, huh, there's obviously something to that. So, and Floyd, you know, Floyd's opinion is one that I don't dismiss by any means. So I think that there's something to it. I still wonder if they kick the tires, if they bring him in, but they've been bringing in other players. Like, they tried out Trevor Siemian, they signed Trevor Siemian. They've tried out Steven Gostkowski, they signed him. So we know that they're capable of bringing in a player to work them out. Jadeveon Clowney, to my knowledge, has not been in Nashville. He has not been at St. Thomas Sports Park to work out for the Tennessee Titans. So why? That makes you, and it could be that they've said, all right, well, we need to work you out. This is what we're thinking price-wise. And he's like, yeah, I'm not making that trip. I don't know. But there are definitely more and more red flags that are popping up with this that make me wonder, okay, maybe this isn't the right move. But with all that said, they're so thin at the position, what are they going to do? Because that's a big concern for me.
Elsewhere, you just let me know that this happened. The Seahawks are going to play the Josh Gordon game and see if they can get something out of him. Interesting move for the troubled wide receiver. His track record is well known. He's got issues. When he's on the field, he can help you. So we'll see what Pete Carroll can do with him.
Yeah, I know. Like, how many chances is this guy going to get?
he must have a lot of redeeming qualities, honestly, for him to get this many chances. I think he's just had a problem that he's been fighting. You know, it's a very specific problem. You know, it's not like one day, you know, he is over here with this problem, and then.
Right.
You know, it's a totally separate kind of problem, and it's just an overall bad behavior. It seems to be one specific thing. It all stems back from using marijuana.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. And I will give the NFL credit of, like, they're not just, I mean, he's got suspensions and all of that, but they're trying to help him, and they're allowing him to be able to sign. Cause, I mean, could they not step in and tell teams, yeah, don't sign him? Like, he's done. He's out. Yeah. Like, it's an indefinite ban. He's never coming back.
And you get the feeling they've done that with some guys. Really, you know, that's not a good look to sign this guy.
So you do wonder about, okay, he's obviously got some, like you said, redeeming qualities, good character, and they're trying to help him.
I don't know if I would say that, but I mean, he must, when he's sitting in front of you or if you're around him, he must be a likable guy. There's only one explanation you could get this many chances, and he is a talent. He's 29 at this point, so you wonder, even at his best, what's his best right now? And I should add that he's had performance-enhancing issues as well as substance abuse to go with it. So he's got to be reinstated even to have a chance to play. But taking a flyer on a one-year deal,
$1 million?
Yeah, a lot of teams have hit big with that before, even if he gives you 6 or 7 good games.
Yeah, and I can remember, I believe it was the Monday night game last year between Seattle and San Francisco, a fantastic football game. And Josh Gordon in the second half made 2 key catches from Russell Wilson that helped put Seattle in position to win. I think I'm thinking of the right game.
He actually played in 5 games last year for the Seahawks, which I don't remember. I mean, you're remembering more than I did. 7 catches for 139 yards. And I guess that was the big moment that you just mentioned.
Yeah, it was. So, I mean, he was a key part of that in that victory. And, you know, like I was saying with Leonard Fournette being around, you know, the right people, and Pete Carroll runs a tight ship, and Russell Wilson, you know what type of person he is at quarterback. So they could have identified, all right, this is a good fit for him. This is where he needs to be. So, you know, that could be one reason why the NFL is allowing it, and maybe it gets reinstated. But $1 million, a 1-year deal, being on that team, I mean, you know that it's Lockett and DK Metcalf, but having Josh Gordon available when he's on his game, he can help you.
Let's circle back to the big story for the Titans today, because it'll lead us into our discussion with Floyd. If you're just joining us and maybe you've had a lot of stuff going on this morning, the Titans did make the kicker switch that's been speculated. Now, it was kind of building for a little over a week. People who are observing practice started to say, hey, you know, they're starting to try out some other kickers. Kind of not sure what they're seeing from Greg Joseph. They have released Greg Joseph. They have brought in the veteran Steven Goskowski, who actually, he's got more of a Southeastern connection than you might realize. He went to Memphis. He played his college ball in Memphis, and he went to high school down in Mississippi.
Yeah. So he's, he's got those connections and bought the house here. So you do wonder if he was going to kick again, if it was like, if the Titans want me, I'll kick again. If not, I'm content with my career. I don't know, but it obviously works out for all parties involved. And as we said earlier in the show, you got to see it now. And the unfortunate part is you're not going to be able to see it in a game until Monday Night Football week one against the Denver Broncos in a place that, you know, I know the fans won't be there, but that's not always easy to kick. So,
well, it may not be easy to kick in that it's a hostile environment, but we do know what happens when you're at Mile High Stadium. You can boom it.
You can.
Your range is pretty far. Now, I don't know if you get a windy night or something, then it may not be the easiest night, but some people have put up some pretty good numbers in that stadium. I mean, there's no place you can't hit from there.
Yeah, and that's true. That could be a confident, you know, that could help him get his confidence back. And you do kind of wonder, they've done some scrimmage type things. They've gone to the stadium. You know, do they do that? Do they have some sort of scrimmage where they can try and get him those high pressure situations? But you still can't replicate it to the point like you would in a game. And we got to see how the body holds up. But clearly, they did not see enough out of Greg Joseph. The misses that he had, they felt were going to hurt them in the long run, and so they went with the veteran. Now, could they try and hold on to Joseph, put him on the practice squad at some point? Maybe, but I agree with the move. I think it's a good one. I'm going to be glad to see Goskowski as a member of the Tennessee Titans, because I have more faith in him because of his track record and what he's done in his career than Greg Joseph.
One thing that has been true over the long haul in the NFL, you need that reliable kicker, especially if you're playing for a team that, you know, I think we're all hoping that this is an explosive offense and they score a lot of touchdowns and they have success in the red zone. I mean, they were money last year, and the kicker's job became a lot easier as the season progressed. But you like to have that reliable guy. You hope that this is it, that this is the guy they're going to stick with. We'll hear from Floyd on it just around the corner. And then at 11:30, we'll play in some comments. I'm sure Mike Vrabel is going to be asked about this a lot. And he's coming up at 11 o'clock with his media availability. We're going to give you the best of that a little bit later in the 11 o'clock hour. During the 12 o'clock hour, Clint Sterner is going to join us. He is a former Nashville Cats quarterback. He covers the Houston Texans. And, of course, going way back, a lot of SEC fans will remember him quarterbacking the Arkansas Razorbacks. Had a fine career there. So Clint will join us during the noon hour, and we'll scout out the Houston Texans. At 1 o'clock, Elliot Friedman joins us. So we've got a lot of great things coming up on the show. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase here on 102.5 The Game. Coming up next, it's the GM. Floyd Reese joins us next.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step 1, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step 2, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa welcome bonus.
Step 3, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step 4, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.